Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What? No way, we got him.
Happy, happy hour. Yeah, baby. Ryan Knight, proud resistor. Twitter God is here. Ryan, we've had you on the regular show.
Yes.
But like me, everyone in Twitterverse is obsessed with you, loves you, and wants to know more about you because we don't know you other than, and that's when I found out you lived in LA. I lost my collective shizzle, right, Travis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so then I was like, oh, wait, we've got like 85,000 mutual friends on Facebook.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't even know he was gay until that.
I know. I knew he was gay. Well, I knew because he's, look at him. Look, he's hot. But he also appreciated my wardrobe choice that I wore a Resist t-shirt for him.
Well, he's not used to seeing you all dolled up. You don't do this in the morning.
And then Chris said, oh, you have tits. Like, I bring them every morning. What?
Yeah, they're generally in a
sports bra.
Yeah. So you flatten them.
Okay. Well, they're there.
Okay.
Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Okay. This is, you know, it's interesting. We had a conversation because we'd have a little thing, you know, if Donald Trump makes you want to drink and talk shit, this is the podcast for you. Yep. And you said you are famously sober. And so I have to tell you, first of all, Travis, Sean, you can confirm this. This is the first time I didn't bring the whole bottle to. Granted, that's a healthy pour, but I seriously want tips for me.
That's two healthy pours.
You just sucking it. I'm only on one step. There's 12. Okay. No, but I thought this is also a great discussion. A, let's get to know you.
Yep.
B, give us tips for how you stay sober because we've talked about this over. There are studies showing that everybody's substance stuff is worse in Trump's America because of the constant chaos, the constant stress, the constant negativity and hatred and just stuff that, you know, we've never experience before. So I would love A, your help on drinking, and B, your help on Twitter.
Oh, God.
Because I am old and I don't know how to do Twitter. I don't know why I bleeped that. It's
where
a happy hour.
Twitter 101.
Why did I fucking that, Sean?
I don't know.
What did I do? Okay.
I can fix it.
Fix it in post?
Yeah.
We'll take the bleep out.
Anyway, but so you are very famously, and good for you. You just had your 8-year
birthday.
Yes.
So I got sober January 1st, 2011. And actually, getting sober was one of the hardest things that I've ever done.
Yeah.
Like, harder than graduating from college.
Yeah.
Harder than, you know,
Where'd you go to college?
Santa Clara in the
Bay
Area.
I need to know everything about you.
And I studied finance.
Wow.
Yes. And I actually...
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
In a very conservative Catholic family.
Me too. See, that's why I knew we were soulmates.
And everything was going great, right? Yeah. I was, you know...
Travis and I got into a slap fight when we first met you. I was like, he's my best friend. He's not your best
friend.
He is like my soulmate. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was the oldest. You know, I went to Catholic school. I wore the little uniform.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Me too.
And I played sports. And I was the all-American boy.
Yeah.
Until, right, I hit my teen years and discovered, oh, wait a second. I think I'm gay.
Right.
And in that moment, everything shifted.
Yeah.
Right? And it was still, it's the 90s, right? I went to high school in the 90s. And so it was just that moment where it was like, all of a sudden, it was like the world that I grew up in.
I'm sorry, did you just say you were in high school in the 90s?
Yes.
Okay, just give me one sip, because you haven't started working with me yet. Okay.
No, but it was just that moment where like everything had shifted in my life.
Sure.
You know, and nothing had really changed. I was still the same Ryan.
Right.
But everyone started treating me differently. And it was...
Tell me you're coming out. When did you come out to who?
I didn't really come out of the closet. So my mother is crafty. And
She's just my type.
There you go. I was... 90s. So it's... I was 20. And I was all in the closet in high school. But that's a whole different story. But I was... one summer, I told my parents that I was going to go to Chicago for an internship. Mm-hmm. Well, the internship was to go be with my boyfriend who had lived in Chicago.
And the old internship.
Yes. Going to Chicago for the internship. And we were on the same phone plan. Right? I was still on the family phone plan.
I did the euphemism pronoun game. What are you doing for Christmas? I'm with someone, something, where.
Yeah.
Internship.
So my mother actually had the password to my phone.
Uh-oh.
And she...
Proud.
Yes. And so she had listened to a voicemail from my first boyfriend. Oh. And at the end of the voicemail, he said, I love you. And so I will never forget it. When I got home that summer, I walked in my house and my mother looked at me. And I'll never forget these words. She said, you're not gay, are you?
Oh.
By the way, that does not seem like a welcoming conversation.
It's a negative. And I was like, no, maybe we should talk. And we proceeded to talk for like 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to understand something a little bit about my family. First of all, my mother and my father met in high school.
Okay.
At a preparatory academy. Again, a very Catholic Jesuit high school.
Yeah.
And came from very similar families. And my mother was a cheerleader, as she likes to always remind us. And my father was the captain of the football team.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
It's a star very classic, wide receiver, very
right? So, like, you know, they meet in high school. And so right away, it's like, you know, they have their first kid is... gay.
Yeah. Yep.
And
how many siblings?
I'm the eldest of five.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yes.
Catholic. They are Catholic.
Yes.
So, but I'll never forget one of the
how'd that rhythm method go for them?
One of the funniest things she said to me, she's like, I just, you know, Ryan, I don't get it. Every girl in high school wanted to sleep with your dad. And like, how does
Did
Mickey,
your mom say the F word?
No.
Oh.
Sleep.
God, but, that would have been fun.
You know, her whole mindset was like, I don't get it. How could Mickey Knight have a gay kid? You know, that was literally,
wow.
And that's like how she phrased it.
Well, I mean, my mom, she's like, oh, you're so pretty.
Yeah.
Aren't you attracted to men? And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
But I fall in love with women.
Yeah.
You know?
So, and actually, it took a long time. I mean, it was a long process. My dad actually, they had divorced way back, but my dad had moved to Alaska. And my dad is literally a commercial fisherman and a hunter.
Oh, wow.
And like, he's a... Because a Republican who fishes in Alaska.
Yeah.
So I would grow up and I'd get on the plane in the summer times and I'd go visit my dad. So I'd have like this country life in Alaska. And then in the school year, I'd be in Seattle.
Yeah.
So it was like this, you know, I'd go back and forth. And it was the hardest with my dad. But because for him, it was like he just couldn't understand any of this. And we actually didn't talk for almost a decade.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was in, I'll never forget, we reconciled and everything is good now. And I'll never forget what my dad said, though, is he said, he's like, you know, when I had found out, your mom called me and she said, Ryan's gay, and basically hung up. You know, that's how he found out.
Wow.
You know,
nicely done. Nicely jarring. Done, mom. Yeah. Nicely done. Okay. Wow.
But no context,
a little
nothing.
Work, a little prep work, let me an opening act, something. Jesus.
Yeah. Just kind of boop. And, but he's like, you know, son, I got a bunch of beer, right? And I went out on my fishing boat, and I went out for 2 days, and I left your stepmom and your two brothers. And he's like, and I cried. And I'll never forget these words. He said to me, he's like, I cried not because I didn't love you any less, but I was scared that the world wouldn't love you.
Yeah.
Just like they love your two brothers.
Right.
And it was that.
My mom said
it was that same
fear. My dad
fear.
Had the same conversation with me.
Yeah. And what's interesting, though, kind of tying this in, coming full circle, is a lot of my activism, you know, a lot of it stems from the fact that, listen, I grew up in this, you know, white, Catholic, conservative family that, you know, I grew up with privilege. And the moment it was like I didn't fit perfectly into that mold of where I came from, people started treating me differently. And I finally, and it was like in that moment, I realized, like, wow, like, this is what this world does when people don't fit how they want them to be.
Yeah.
And in that moment, it just, it really, it opened me up. You
are my Me Too spirit animal, but not, but in a pure way.
Yeah.
Because everything you're saying, I relate to. Right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of what, you know.
My mom was like, oh, Steffi, did I do something wrong? To which I said, yes, Mom, I did. It's your fault.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, my mom didn't know any better. These are the tools that she had. You know, these are the tools that, you know, and it's all baked into the religion and all that. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that's a little, you know, that was a journey in and of itself.
Yeah.
And
so, Ryan, you are 38.
I will be 38 on St. Patrick's Day.
Wow.
I'm 37.
Coming up 37, pardon me.
Don't age me.
And you're hanging on. Yeah. I'm not.
So, like, all super hot people in adulthood, you said you were awkward when you were younger. I'm like, oh, please, whatever. Epic eye roll.
I was, like, the biggest dork growing up. I had these big braces, I had acne, I was also, again, I was in this very conservative world, and kind of deep down I knew I didn't fit in.
Yeah.
So I always kind of felt like an other, you know, I always felt like I didn't fit in. And it wasn't until much later when I got sober 8 years ago that I started to realize, you know, because the thing about getting sober, and I think it's a good metaphor for a lot of things, is you can do a lot of things on your own. You can work really hard on your own. You can achieve outward success on your own. You can study hard on your own, but you can't get sober on your own. It's that moment in where you got to ask for help.
Yeah.
Right. It's the, and it's that part of where society thinks that asking for help is a sign of weakness, but it's actually the opposite.
Yeah.
And you can finally admit that you need help. That's like the strongest thing you can do.
Yeah.
So in that moment 8 years ago, when I finally got help, that just kind of opened me up in a way that just allowed me to be comfortable in my skin. And then that's kind of what started getting me on the, well, of course, Trump as well. I mean, that just kind of was a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But
that's
what started to make me realize that, like, our society, it works for some people, but there's a segment of the population, whether you're LGBTQ, you know, like us, or if you're a person of color, or, you know, if you're an immigrant who came here, like, there's kind of this embedded, like, we don't like to talk about it, but like there's this embedded, like, white supremacy that exists in America.
Yeah.
You know, and no one really discusses it. You know, we didn't talk about it growing up.
Well, it's
up,
becoming so much more obvious.
Trump just kind of brought it all out of the closet.
It's like, we compare it to whether, you know, it's Genie out of the bottle or the scene in Ghostbusters. We're just like,
totally,
all the horrible racist, sexist, homophobic, just assholes are just been released.
Well, my joke.
Don't cross the streams.
Totally. When Obama was president, I felt like it gave so many LGBTQ people permission to come out of the closet, right? And with the whole gay marriage thing. And then now it's like under Trump, it's like it gave all of the, you know, the bigots and the racists who kind
of... people don't want to go get the fuck back in.
They were in the closet. Now they're coming out of the closet with their bigotry.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we need you to go back into the rocks.
We need to go back in your Haiti-Heidi holes.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys had your chance to come out. Now it's ours.
So now, wait, well, let's go back to when, because we've been talking about, my best friend's a psychologist, and any psychologist will tell you, substance problems are through the roof. And again, I mean, to blame him for everything. Sometimes Chris and I have a friend that died of an overdose. He struggled with substance his whole life. But,
his best friend
specifically said he was a sensitive, brilliant guy, and the stress of having to talk and write about Trump all the time was one of the big elements.
Yeah, because he was clean and sober since 9/11.
Yeah.
And then Trump got elected and it pushed him back again.
Ryan, you are inspiring, saving so many people's lives. Give us some advice on how to deal with our substance issues in Trump's America. Because how did you... Did you waver at all within the last couple of years with Trump?
No, absolutely not. I mean, okay. I had 6 years sober when he got elected. You know, I mean, like anything else, you have to have a support team around you.
Yeah.
You know, I attend 12-step meetings. I don't do it on my own. You know, I think it's, you just have to, it's kind of, you have to have good outlets. You got to, you know, find ways to cope that aren't, you know.
Right.
Your old school, you know, you got to kind of take away your old tools that you had. Like before, right. Like when something bad happened, I drank. If something great happened, I drank.
Yeah.
You know, it was like whether it was the worst day,
yeah.
I drank, or it was the
yeah.
best day.
I'm celebrating. And, yeah, I'm exactly. stressed out.
And,
yeah.
and it's
yeah.
now it's about just reconnecting with, you know, who you are and just right. and kind of sitting through it. You know, I don't get to escape anymore because for me, it's like it's not one. One turns into yeah. two, turns into three, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, if I could sit and be like you and just have a nice glass of wine at happy hour, I'd be having wine with you.
Well, you.
But for me, it just, and that's the well, thing with addiction. It's so hard to explain. There's like this invisible line that yeah. addicts cross. And once you're an addict, it's really hard to kind of put the plug back in the jug. They
no,
say.
I want to, I really want to dig into this with yeah. you. Because you mentioned like, oh, I was really like a party boy. Like I, you know, yeah. went hard in the yeah. clubs and whatever. But yeah. so what did that look like and what woke you up from that?
For me, it was, you know, they
I know there's celebrities we can't talk about, but oh my God, I wish I could.
Oh God.
I've only had like three sips of wine. I'm not going to.
You'll hear people say things like, you know, like rock bottom, right? And that's like a common yeah. thing. First of all, the Republican Party has hit rock bottom. Mm-hmm. They just don't know it yet.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
They're going to have a 12 like, step out, just, out of they just out don't, Trumpism,
they
man.
They just don't realize it.
Yeah.
You know, like they have hit rock
they
bottom.
They really are.
The Trump presidency hit rock bottom, you know, the, when yeah. he, when back in Helsinki.
Yeah.
When he sided with Putin over our own intelligence agencies. But for me, it was, I didn't, you know, I wasn't homeless. I didn't have like a financial rock bottom. It was more a spiritual rock bottom where yeah. I saw that if I continued down this path, that my life was always going to go this direction. And at the end, it came down to love for me because I wanted to find a partner and I wanted to build like a very, yeah. you know, a stable life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I was drinking, I could never do it. You know, some days were okay, but yeah. it's like I've always had the best intentions and I've always had a huge heart, but my addiction actually took that away from me. So I became.
How so?
Because I'm super compassionate and I yeah. care about the world and I care about people. At the end of my addiction, it was like, I just stopped caring.
Yeah,
it there was like you. Inside. Like mm-hmm. when I say a spiritual rock bottom, like I was dying inside.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so that feeling, just that emptiness and that loneliness. I mean, I don't wish it on anybody, but yeah. at the same time, that's what turned my life around.
Yeah,
where I realized, like, look, I can either stay on this path, or I can get on a higher path, on a better path.
Yeah.
And I did. And, you know, I'm just so grateful.
Yeah.
Because it's been, I mean, it totally opened me up and just opened my life up. And, you know, it's just been a journey. And yeah. again, and it's not perfect.
Ryan,
you know,
I drink too much wine. Help me.
Oh, God.
You're doing just fine.
I'm doing my intervention. No, but I do want to ask you. Because
we didn't tell you something about this podcast. It is an intervention.
Yeah.
I scheduled my own intervention.
We're all here, Stephanie, because we love you.
There's a bus waiting for you outside.
Yeah, I hate buses. You know, that's going to make me want more wine.
One thing I will say is this is, you know, this problem, and especially the opioid epidemic,
yeah.
right? I mean,
yeah.
we're seeing just a huge problem in America mm-hmm. right now. And one of the things is someone who knows what it's like to be an addict that I was really offended by from Trump was when he started using the wall is you know, and money for the wall
yeah.
is like, that's going to solve the opioid yeah. problem.
Oh,
and
so
I literally
ridiculous.
Know as someone like, listen, like a wall didn't get me sober.
Yes. Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Treatment and a 12 exactly. step program got me sober.
Right.
Yeah. And I know how addicts are. You put the wall up, they're going to find a way to get a drug.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or take a drink. You know, so it's like, it was just that small minded thinking of him that like, and that he used a problem that's causing so many families
pain. Oh my God.
And he's now mixed it into this whole, you know, scapegoating immigrants and this racist wall that he wants to build. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
A wall is not going to get people sober.
Yeah.
You know, and the other part is he was cutting money from Medicaid.
Yes.
And a lot of people depend on Medicaid.
That's right.
For opioid treatment. And so it was just like the hypocrisy of it. I had sent a tweet that when this all happened, it was like a year and a half ago, and it went like super viral.
Yeah.
Because I had told him, like, look, a wall didn't get me sober. Treatment did.
Yeah.
And you cutting Medicaid isn't helping anyone.
Oh, you've gotten retweeted by the Pentagon. Well, yeah. We're going to get into the Twitter section. Let's finish the substance addiction. Because, no, I seriously wanted to ask you because I'm, you know, I joke a lot about it, but I'm being serious that, you know, I get it that, like, I've never drinking hard liquor. I've never done any drug, even pot. I don't smoke. I'm really healthy. I eat healthy. I exercise. But I'm drinking too much wine, and it is exponentially worse. And I can't just blame Trump, but I, like you, I take all this really personally, and I realize that I shouldn't hate him, that it's not healthy, that I shouldn't personalize this. Chris and I have worked together for 20 years. I've never put, you know, the Bush administration, I didn't personalize it. This is so personally stressful for me. I literally feel like I'm stroking out most days. And let me just ask the final question, because you alluded to something that we've had a lot of comics on that are sober because they hit it so hard that it was never just drinking. Drinking was always a gateway to cocaine, to whatever. A lot of comics, you know, they couldn't. I mean, the good news for me is I've never had a glass of Chardonnay and gone, wow, this is nice. I need heroin now. You know, like, I'm never, you know. But that being said, wine is my substance, and I am overusing it. And, you know, I know that some psychologists, I mean, including the one, you know, I went to for a while, said that there is a new school of thought about moderation for some people. But what is your thought on that? Because I know AA people are like, no, everybody's got to quit all together. But, I mean, but what do you think?
Listen, 12-step worked for me, but I'm not one of those people who sits and tells other people what to do. Right. You know, I can only share my experience, what has worked for me. I'm not one of those like, you know, you got to do this and you got to do that.
Right.
You know, I
right.
think everyone has to find their you know, their center and their happy medium. And for me, that was being sober. One thing I want to say, though, is hearing you talk about, and I think it's a really important thing to point out, is I don't resist Trump because I hate Trump.
Right.
I resist Trump because I hate what he's doing to our country.
Yes.
Right?
I agree.
There's a big difference.
You're a better man than I.
But the difference is because it's, you've got to take that feeling out of it, because when we can take the feeling of like, no, I don't hate Trump, but I really hate what he's doing to our country, because he's intentionally sowing chaos.
Yeah.
And we've never had a president of the United
intentionally
States.
Intentionally gaslighting us.
Every day. Every single day.
It's like being in a relationship with a borderline every day, lying to you every day.
And we've never had a president from the Oval Office. I mean, the main job of the president is to unite the country and bring the country together. From day one, he's never tried to do that, right? It's just been, I'm gonna be the president for a third of America, and then I'm gonna let the two-thirds of America just be divided amongst themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very fascist in a way.
And he ran on solving the opioid crisis, and yet he's taking money away from solving it.
There you go.
He's gaslighting us.
You can do it on
that
every
way.
Subject, on every subject.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
so
the other thing,
I
was gonna say is, you know, one of the reasons I started my Twitter account, Proud Resister,
What year did you do that?
2016.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So just recently. I mean, I had a different account, but I just started this one because I had realized very soon in that campaign that he's just literally lying to his supporters, right? And he was using Twitter to do it. I mean, and the news, you know, you'd see like CNN and they'd cut to like, Trump tweeted, you know, that he's going to ban all Muslims. Or like, and it was like, he was able, it was that first election where, you know, in the 90s, it was television. In the early 2000s, it was television.
Yeah.
Finally, in 2016, it was like the internet was having just as much pull as television was. And Trump was using that. And Putin was using it, right? Putin weaponized the internet against us.
Yeah.
He's the first one to really weaponize it. So I kind of realized, look, like,
we can take it back.
Well,
right?
If we can. And that's why I started Proud Resister. I'm like, if he's going to use Twitter to spread propaganda and to share the lies, then we need to use Twitter to share the truth.
Yeah.
And that was literally why I started it, because I could tell there was bots and there was all this disinformation going on. I'm like, fine, if he's going to play that game, we need to do it too.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, you are, I mean, seriously, I mean, not to suck up, although we are in Hollywood, but you are such a rock star on Twitter. And when you come on our show, there's such a huge reaction, because just sitting here talking to you now, I think it's because what radiates is what you're talking about. You are so pure of heart. I mean, I do want to eat with a melon baller. I know you think that's not a
that's
thing.
That's gross.
No, that's weird.
Okay. A lot of people do. Because you come from such a good place and such an empathetic place. And I've said on the air before, you know, we've all been duped by a con man.
Yep.
These guys know, in particular, mine, someone I thought was my best friend, who ended up in prison for, you know, fraud.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that's what I'm saying, is you do have some empathy for these people that, you know, I guess he's been it's amazing, but I guess a pretty good grifter and con man his whole life.
Yeah.
But
no, he's the one thing that sometimes Democrats don't give him enough credit, that he is really good at lying.
Yeah.
You know, he is really good at being manipulative. He's really good at, and those are characteristics of a con man, right?
I just wish he'd use those powers for good.
Yeah, well,
and not evil.
Hello. And I think that that's what his supporters got so sucked into in that campaign. Is you got to remember, a lot of these people, it's, I always say this, and this might be kind of unpopular, but it's really easy to make fun of the stereotypical Trump supporter, right? Yeah. The Trump supporter that you see at the rally on TV, you know, kind of that middle of the country, working class white, you know, white Trump supporter who's struggling, right? And the jobs are gone and all this stuff. And so, but I actually have a lot more sympathy for those Trump supporters than I do for the ones who knew better in 2016, but they voted because they, you know, and they had money and wealth, you know, kind of that top upper echelon of society. A lot of those people voted for Trump.
The selfish racist ones, I don't.
And they got a free pass, you know? Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'll just say is, and we've talked about this, is when you have a president who's lying so much to the American people are starving and hungry for the truth.
Yeah.
They just are.
Yeah.
And the other part that's kind of been unfortunate to watch is, you know, I don't attack the media like our president does, but the media kind of has dropped the ball a little bit. Which is ironic because he calls them fake. If anything, the media tends to kind of skew more to the right.
Thank you.
Right. Because they normalize him and normalize him. And now we're 3 years into this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, did they learn anything from 2016?
I know. No, did they didn't.
Learn
they
anything?
Didn't. They didn't. And this
because
is why
they're still doing it.
I keep saying this every day. It's like Obama used to say, we're the ones we've been waiting for. Mm-hmm. This is why you resonate so much with people. Because you're like, okay, the media's not going to help us.
No.
Trump administration is clearly not going to do anything to Russia to keep them out of our whatever. You know, no one's going to help us.
Nope.
Like we
are the heroes that we've been waiting for.
Right. Right.
You know, we do.
And, I think and of that's you as like the baby Jesus of Twitter. Like you were.
I don't know about that. I dropped the F bomb here and there, and what's actually interesting, I have never had used the F word publicly, like on Twitter, until Donald Trump.
Well, wow.
And
you.
The only reason,
listen, and we also, say,
and the only reason
this is for people that want to drink and swear. We ask if you're not going to drink that you swear a little more.
And thank God, my amazing grandmother is resting in peace right now because I'm glad she's not here to have seen one of my tweets where I dropped the F bomb. But it's sometimes it's so.
What'd you say? What was it?
Well, I've done it a few times. I'll use the F word, but the only reason is like there's a reason I do is because it's the only word that can accurately describe what's happening.
Yes.
Right. When the kids are being locked in cages and separated from their family,
right.
And he's, you know, committing treason with Putin.
Yeah. No, I mean
sometimes the F word is the only word that does it justice.
No, exactly. And this is why I mean this podcast. You know, even though we have a regular 3-hour radio show, is broken up because you're right. I mean, we joke about it, but we're like, if Donald Trump makes you want to drink and swear, I mean, because sometimes it is hard within the restraints of the FCC to adequately express us stealing children and caging them and raping them.
Yeah.
I don't, you can't fucking see
there
that. It just, I mean, and the fact that he's a fucking traitor to the United States of America and has the nuclear codes. And I always say there is not the right level of hysteria for people that call us hysterical.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that the resistance has done really well, and we saw it in 2018, is we kind of brought, you know, all the kind of coalition of the Democratic Party together, including some never Trump Republicans.
Yeah.
Right. And we've all come together and just realized.
I live for Anna Navarro saying
yes,
pussy.
Yes. Welcome, Anna Navarro. You know,
I live for Anna Navarro saying pussy on CNN.
We've been in a constant state of a constitutional crisis.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when
Richard Painter, I mean, come on. I just, you know, he's my spirit animal.
His goose is cooked here.
Yeah.
I love Richard Painter.
I'm a Maisie Hirono kind of guy.
I am gay and yet horribly sexually attracted to Michael Steele, former RNC chair.
Mm, interesting.
danger when you taste brown sugar. Okay, go ahead. Brian, what was your...
No, that just the you know, from the phone calls, I remember when they tried to repeal Obamacare and we were all online pushing people to call and calling Congress and... you know, just the organizing that we've been able to do. It's, you know, we've been able to organize rallies with it. We've been doing text banking, using it to get people to the polls with texting. You know, a lot of it's frustrating, but a lot of, you know, younger voters, they don't want to be called anymore. You know, if you send them a text message, they'll, you know, and say, you know, this
Sean told me, he's like, don't call me, just text me. Don't
your polling
call
place opens at 8 a.m., you know, election day, get out there and go vote.
Yeah.
You know, it's helpful.
Yeah.
You know,
I tried when I first started working with Sean, I just called him on my big rotary phone. Sean. He's like, what are you doing?
But I also think, too, it's also been a way for us. Could you imagine if we didn't have Twitter and we didn't have a way to interact? and connect. Well, like it's
try. Okay, teach me. You're going to be my sober coach and also my Twitter coach.
Oh, geez.
What's the difference between...
You're in trouble.
What's the difference between home and notifications? And how do we become Twitter gods like and goddesses like you? You do a lot of original tweets. I try.
Mama tries.
I'm like the mama, and I do a lot of like retweets and likes. Like it's like putting it on my refrigerator with a magnet going, that was good.
Yeah.
You give everyone a gold star.
I don't have a filter. So what's in my head, I tweet. So if I
do, you have a full time job?
I'm an activist. That's my job.
I know. That's what's. Can you just go back a second? You grew up in Seattle.
Yep.
Went to college in Santa Clarita. Majored
Santa
in finance.
Santa Clara. Yes.
Whatever. No, they're
big difference.
Northern California, Southern California.
Up there in Northern California. Yeah. Who cares? Clovis, Fresno, whatever.
And I worked in corporate finance for 7 years, and it almost killed me. I was a senior financial analyst.
Why'd you pick that?
You're good with numbers?
Honestly, probably because my stepdad worked in finance. And, you know, it was kind of like...
Why not? It
sounded like a good idea at the time. But I was not a finance suit and tie kind of guy.
Right.
At the end, it also kind of was... That was during my addiction. And so I left when I...
You were like a madman. You were a drunk madman.
Totally. And it was work hard, play hard. And at the end of that, I also, you know, I...
Wait, no, where was that?
I worked in Century City.
You went to college
company.
And then ended up here. Okay.
In Northern California, in the Bay Area. And then I came down to Los Angeles in 2005.
Okay.
And I also, like, I'm the type of person, because I'm very empathetic and I'm super compassionate and I have a lot of energy and a lot of passion... I need to be doing something that matters to me.
Yeah.
Something that like feels like I'm making a difference. And corporate finance didn't feel like I was making a difference. I was making a lot of money. I was doing really well on the outside.
So you make a living being a Twitter god?
Well, no. No. My partner owns his own PR company. And so it's, you know, no. Listen, grassroots activism is, you know, I don't make much money, but the reward isn't the money. You don't do it for the money.
Yeah.
You do it because we are in a state of emergency and our country needs, you know, it needs people to organize and people to speak out. So no, and my first entrance to politics though is I used to work for the mayor of West Hollywood.
Okay.
And I worked on one of his campaigns and then I managed his campaign. I worked in local politics for like 3.5 years.
You always had that streak in you. You were
totally. Yeah. And then, you know, when 2016 happened, I just was like, okay, let's go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, teach me Twitter. What's the difference between home and notifications? And
I don't even.
How
home,
do you?
Home
and
is
you,
where you see the
how
stuff.
How much do you retweet? How much do you like? And do you? How many original tweets do you do a day?
Oh, I don't count.
Okay.
I just, you know, I don't count. I don't plan. I just,
because, I'm spoken word.
It's organic.
Person, so I like say it at 3 hours.
That's
why part of why we brought,
person.
That's why we brought Chris in, because it's like a lot of that is like, okay, transcribe what I said.
Right.
And you know, because I'm just not you. I'm not a writer like you are, like, or a, you know, sort of, I mean, but it's interesting. You have gotten such a huge, like, I feel like I know you. That's why we thought this would be the greatest happy hour. And it is, because people don't know Twitter people. We just know you by your Twitter handle. It's like, who is this guy?
Who is this guy?
That like inspires us and makes us laugh and makes us angry and fires us up and gets us to the polls.
Yeah, the whole point of it was, okay, the Russians are using bots, right, to share disinformation.
Right.
And Trump is tweeting propaganda. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we got to start using Twitter to share the truth
and
speak truth to power.
It's,
and that's all
your,
it was. That's
age.
How it started.
It's your generation that's leading this revolution,
think,
man.
I also think what happened was, too, is I'll never forget, like, when he first became president, he used to say over and over again, no one in my campaign met with Russia. No one in my campaign met with Russia.
Oh, my God.
And I was one of, like, I remember it was, like, my first viral tweet. It's like, wait, no one in your campaign met with Russia except Jared Kushner, Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort.
100.
And just started listing them. And at that point, the media, like the CNNs of the world, weren't even talking about, everyone was kind of scared to touch the Russia story at first, you know, in the first few months of his presidency.
I know.
And so you know, I could just, you could just see with Trump, he'd tweet something that was a blatant lie. Right. So all I would do is tweet back, like, no, like, this is wrong.
No, people
and
like
that's
you.
It. It's not like, it's not right. brain surgery.
You
like
fact check.
You know, you just, yes. Yeah, that's yeah. how it is.
Ryan, people like you are doing the basic journalism that they have fallen down yeah. on the job. And you are right. You are forcing them into it. And that's why you are such a fucking patriot. And I that people, and, you know, there are people like you and Malcolm Nance and, you know, Sarah Kendzior and Natasha Bertrand and, of course, Rachel and Joanne Reed. I'm telling you, when the history of this time is written, you guys are going to be on that wall of heroes.
They will. I don't know about me, but
well, no, absolutely. But listen, look at AOC. Look at AOC.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, don't come at a 29-year-old on Twitter with a smartphone. You know, like that's yeah. the other thing is you guys are leading the way. I love this. What is your take on that? I mean, I love this fierce, new, young, multicolored, you know, female in many ways, blue wave that we helped.
I love
happen.
It. I love AOC. One thing that, you know, this might be a little controversial, but what I like about AOC is she's progressive, but she has big, bold ideas. But she's not divisive.
She's yes. smart. She's
and
smart
so she,
as shit.
She, so one of the things is so Bernie Sanders is. Bernie Sanders has moved the party more to the left, and, right. and Bernie Sanders is right on healthcare, and he's right on climate change.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, when you have big, bold ideas, you can't get big, bold ideas across if you're divisive, right?
Right.
Because these, if you want the American people to buy these big ideas, you need to start being a unifier and bringing people together. Yeah. And that's so with Bernie, it's always. It's not that I dislike Bernie. It's just that sometimes I feel like he's got the right message. He can just be the wrong messenger sometimes.
Yes.
And with AOC, it's the complete opposite. She is able to push progressive, you know, bold ideas like the Green New Deal and Medicare for All and do it in a way that energizes our party and is not as divisive.
Right.
And
so, in a concise way.
And it's not yes. being a Bernie yes. basher to ask about his Russia votes. To ask about his gun votes, to say he will turn 80 in his first year as president, those are all valid, not Bernie bashing.
No,
they're all things that are going to be hashed out in this primary.
Listen, the thing is we have way more in common in our party than we have way more in common than what divides us. And if we listen, if we get back into this whole, you know, like we had in 2016, Bernie, Hillary, and we start fighting, you know, the infighting, we'll lose again.
And the media because loves it. The media loves it.
No, the media loves it.
That's what I said about shut the fuck up, Hillary people, about Bernie asking for private planes, and shut the fuck up, Bernie people, about calling Hillary an asshole.
Yeah. Listen, we all got to get over it.
Yeah.
All got to get over it.
Yeah.
Because if the infighting continues, we'll lose again.
Yeah.
Because the Republican Party... they are...
This is exactly what Russia did.
Well, yes. And he's got a third of our country locked down. So if you have a third of the country locked down and then you get the rest of the country fighting amongst themselves, mm-hmm. right? That's what fascism is.
Yeah.
It's a radical agenda. And that's what he does. He gets his, you know, he's got his people going. They're going and voting based on guns and God, essentially. You know, that's how they vote. And so he's got them locked in.
We're at a point where we have Republican male legislators wearing pearls in front of mothers whose
kids
ridiculous. Have been shot to death.
It's ridiculous.
To mock them for, clutch the pearls on guns. And right. I was like,
and hey. Making up extreme radical lies to try to take a woman's right to choose away and take away a woman's reproductive freedom. It's horrifying what they're doing with all that.
Twitter baby Jesus. Okay. How do we unite our... I mean, I'm going in a week to take care of my 96-year-old... you know, Fox News watching Republican Trump voting mom who broke her hip, who I love with all my heart and soul. She only watches Fox News and she's 96. I'm not going to argue with her anymore.
No, I'm
not going to talk to her about politics.
A lot of deep breaths.
Right. But
because
what you say,
day,
like, how do we,
with your mom, for instance, it's not with your mom. It's like, it's not about being right anymore. It's just about having a good experience with your mom and being there for her. You know, there are some times where...
How do I avoid wine in this situation?
Well, you might need
having to watch Fox News for a week.
Give her some vodka and milk, and you drink your wine.
But the way we counteract what's happening to us, and it sounds cliche, but it's to keep uniting and it's to keep sharing the truth because they are going to keep spewing. And then the other part that drives me nuts with the Republican Party is... look at the biggest issues in our country. Look at gun violence, for instance. Their solution isn't a solution. Their solution is to take more money from the NRA. Mm-hmm. They don't have a gun violence solution. Look at climate change.
They don't both have crises. Both crises.
They don't have a solution for climate change. They call it a hoax. They don't want to do anything about it. Look at economic inequality.
Yeah.
Another big issue that I will say Bernie is right about economic inequality.
Absolutely. Yep.
And that's one issue that he has been pushing hard since before 2015. And look at the Republicans' policy on that. Tax breaks for the 1% and for the corporations and for billionaires.
Yeah.
So it's like on the big, huge issues from gun violence to climate change to economic inequality to women's rights, right? They want to take away a woman's right to choose.
Yeah.
They actually, not only don't they have a position, their position is against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And so they're literally trying to stop progress.
Yeah.
And so for us, we have to keep coming together.
Yeah.
Because and that's the only way to stop it. And no matter who wins the Democratic primary, we vote for them.
Yes,
if
absolutely.
That person is Kamala Harris,
yes.
If that person is Bernie Sanders,
yeah.
Whoever wins,
yeah,
we yeah. vote for who wins the Democratic primary.
Where are you on the impeachment issue? Because this is the whole issue right now, isn't it? How do Democrats fight yeah. right now? And are we fighting the right way? And are we? I mean, speaking of crisis, this is a crisis we
yep.
are in.
Absolutely.
What do you want to call it? Constitutional president, whatever you want to call it. We are in a national security crisis.
Yep.
We're in a crisis.
Yep. Well, the new Quinn poll that was out that we talked about yesterday,
yeah.
64% of the American people believe that Donald Trump committed a crime before he became president.
But not enough percentage think he should be impeached.
Right.
I mean,
and 56% of people don't want him to be impeached. And that is an issue. And the other part, the thing for me is it's like if Trump is allowed to get away with this, it sets a very dangerous precedent moving forward that Republican presidents can get away with anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my biggest fear. And it also is, I think the best way to stop Trump is now.
Yeah.
Right. And I think because if he gets away with obstructing justice and he gets away with the illegal hush money payoffs, it's going to embolden
him. And we get to 2020 where Michael Cohen says there won't be a peaceful transfer of power. He's already setting up it will be an illegitimate election. This is...
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think Democrats, we have this... Sometimes they assume that like the Republican Party is going to fight fair. No.
No.
They're going to suppress our votes.
Yep. Never.
They're going to get us infighting against each other.
Yeah.
Russia's going to come back. The bots are going to come back.
Yep.
You know, any kind of... This is why I'm saying like we can't... You know, the Hillary wing of the party and the Bernie wing, like, we got to get over that.
No more wings.
Listen, the only thing...
We're out of wings.
The only thing we can control...
This is like in Buffalo when I was growing up. We're out of wings. Go home.
Is if, you know, we can control unity and we can control bringing our party together. At the end of the day, we all got to get over our egos.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants what they want, but as soon as that primary is over, we all got to line up behind whoever wins.
No, I that's why I appreciate Tom Steyer, who's like, you know what, I'm going to give money and I'm going to target Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan and Mitch McConnell, and I'm not going to have my ego, you know, just saying, you know, Mocha Vente asshole Howard Schultz. My point is the coffee boy of this race. But, you know, and Sherrod Brown, I was actually a little disappointed because I really like Sherrod Brown.
Yep.
But,
he has
you know,
a good economic message. He calls Trump's economic message phony populism.
Right. He could still be a great vice presidential candidate.
Well, I know. I feel like a lot. Some people are really like, I'm putting, you know, my country over my ego. This is too important a time. Bloomberg, I mean, God bless him.
Yep.
Going like, this is too important a time to split the vote.
And remember that. So I was pushing impeachment hard 2 weeks ago because, again, like they did in the Nixon time is... How do you get more people to want to impeach him? You educate the American people.
Thank you.
And that's what the impeachment hearings do. I think sometimes, you know, Democrats, we can be too smart for our own good. People are already counting votes in the Senate when, no, that's like five steps down the road.
Right.
The first step
Wait
is
till
start.
Wait all the evidence is there.
The first
start.
Step is start
Thank you.
The impeachment
this
hearings.
This is what Tom Steyer says to us all the time.
Because
start.
What happens is the other part is as soon as those impeachment hearings start, it's going to force the media to cover it.
Yeah.
So the media is not going to be all over the place and normalizing Trump as much.
I said it today.
And it's also going to educate the American people about all the corruption and all the crimes that have happened.
This is what Jill Weinman says.
And the blatant
says.
Destruction of justice this that Trump
what,
has committed.
Yes,
and
this
so
is what happened in Watergate.
Why. So 2 weeks ago, what I did like this week is the Democrats came to play this week from the House Judiciary Committee issuing those 81 document requests.
They're setting it all
and
up.
They are setting it up. And they're setting it up as almost the foundation for impeachment, right? Because the House Judiciary Committee, it's what they call it. They're investigating him for obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
abuse of power and corruption,
yeah.
right? And so I do think that's a good step. You know, the Ways and Means Committee is going to go after his tax returns. Mm-hmm. We know there's a bundle of treasure hidden in there.
Yeah.
You know, of things, you know. And
they just need, I think they're making sure that they investigate him from every possible side
yeah.
to make sure they have enough to impeach him. Because if they overreach and aren't able to impeach him, that's going to destroy the Democratic Party.
We don't want to swing and a miss. Like
can I just say how much I just said today, I hate the word overreach because they have had a reach around for the last two years to protect him. They're not used to what oversight looks like to what constitutional checks and balances.
Because for 2 years, the Republicans let him get away with everything.
Yes. Right.
I mean, they
Not just let him get away with everything.
They helped him cover it up.
Actively. Acted as his defense attorneys and helped him cover it up.
Devin Nunes is running across the White House lawn.
What I was saying, I'm not saying that the Democrats are currently overreaching. I'm saying they are doing their due diligence.
But the media will use that word. That's what he's saying, right?
No, totally. The media is not on our side.
No.
Trump tends to think they are.
No, stop buying the liberal media. I mean, I literally read a headline. Kamala Harris is connecting with audiences, perhaps too much?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Fuck. No, it reminded me of Hillary again all over again.
Too cold and calculating?
Yeah.
Kamala Harris, too warm?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, whose mattress am I thinking of in the fairy tale?
The Princess and the Pea?
Yeah, something. Right, the mattress is not right. It's just not right.
Yeah.
No, the Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Right. Yes, okay. That. Yes, one. Thank you, Chris.
And
yes.
I also think that, you know, the natural thing of the party is the Republicans are always playing offense and the Democrats are playing defense. And at this time, it's time for the Democrats to go on offense.
Thank you.
Because you can't score a touchdown unless you're on offense.
Did you play football in high school? What did you play?
I did. I was a running back.
I bet you were.
My first 2 years. And then
the boy you dated at USC was a football player.
Yes, he had the same curvature of the penis that Bill Clinton apparently did, which we had to learn about through many, many years of investigations with taxpayer money about a failed land deal that showed no wrongdoing into his private life. And he had Mike had that too in high school, my USC football boyfriend. He had a curved this thing. Okay, my point is...
And the other thing I'll just say
Ryan,
is...
I want to get into your love life.
Oh, dear.
Let me just say this before we get there. The reason I like AOC so much and Lauren Underwood and Rashida Tlaib is because they aren't afraid to
be
fearless,
who they are. They're
fearless, man. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of energy our party needs.
Yes.
You know, we need that fearlessness.
I'm on their side, man. I'm
listen, the majority of America.
And they have each other's backs.
They have each other's backs.
Stop fucking, they're always afraid we're going to go ooh.
And they drive Fox News and the Republicans crazy. And I love that.
They just boycotted Girl Scout cookies because AOC used to be a Girl Scout.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
More thin mints for me.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Ryan, tell us about your super hot boyfriend, how long this has been going. This is the sound of a millions of hearts breaking across America.
Oh, please. Philip and I have been together for 7 years.
Yeah. Live together? Are you getting married? Don't mean to be nosy.
We live together. I call him my partner.
Yes.
I grew up in that Catholic family.
And yeah.
Listen, I was a huge advocate for gay marriage. I love that we can get married if we want to.
But you're a giant pussy in person?
I'm not needling you. No, we take our relationship
I'm not poking you.
One day at a time. And it's been going so well that, you know, maybe we will get married. Remember when
Can I be the flower girl?
You can be
let's
the flower
do this.
Girl.
Find me a wife and let's do this. Let's do a double.
You can do a double.
It can be like the Brady sisters. Yes.
Okay. Am I being too intrusive?
No, not at all. No. Listen, Philip is amazing.
He is super hot and super nice and super smart.
And we're kind of opposites attract. He's Cuban. He grew up in Miami.
I like to smoke that cigar.
I grew up in Seattle, literally
Stephanie!
Opposite ends of the country.
I have
and,
weird taste.
He's a really good guy. You know, he's got a big heart.
Yeah.
You know, he...
So do you.
Yeah.
Do you just like weep at Lifetime movies?
No.
No. No, because you're way more empathetic than I am about Trump, even. And some Trump supporters, because some of them are just awful and racist, and
it's horrifying.
You know, when people write me and say, I hope you get cunt cancer, it's hard, Ryan. Yeah. You get hate mail, you get the same, right?
Are you kidding? I've been called everything from a libtard to a soy boy. That's
soy
the big
boy.
One. They call me soy boy.
What does that mean?
I've been called that.
It's,
I don't even know what that is.
It's what they use to describe a guy who's not like macho enough.
Yeah.
Oh, what? You, please, who was the guy this week that wrote me that wants to tear me a new asshole, spelled T-A-R-E? I just glory in their bad grammar and spelling.
Listen, they'll use they'll use the F word.
Oh yeah.
You know the.
Yeah. Oh, they'll tell you to get AIDS and die.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
they'll tell you to get AIDS and die. I've gotten that one.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah. No, Trump just cured that yesterday. Did you hear?
Yes, I heard. And he quoted the New York Times while doing so.
God damn it. Can I just say, Ryan?
He doesn't do anything and he takes credit for everything.
I know.
Right.
Can I just say, I've talked about this many times, but
he takes credit for everything.
Damn it. I wish like they had figured that out before my high school boyfriend died of AIDS, because he was the best guy in the world, you know? And it just, you're right. It's like, I understand how your activism intersects with your life, because, you know, I always said if AIDS had made, right, you know, white Republican men's dicks fall off, they would have cured that in 1982.
Of course.
But my high school boyfriend died. Yep. You know, he was one of the first guys that got it, you know, and so, you know, the fact that like Trump's like, it's like, shut the fuck up. Yep. You and your whole party and Mike Pence in particular have been not only no help, but counterproductive in this fight of our lives.
Absolutely. I studied a lot of the activism in the 80s because I was born in 81, but the big the big slogan, silence is death, right? The reason we had gay marriage was because of all the activism that started in the LGBTQ movement in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, well, even before, back before
you
that.
You were born when I was in college.
Aww. But no, the silence is death in the speaking
baby
out.
Baby Twitter Jesus, I love you. It's really weird, but it's really true how, you know, it's not like age, race, whatever. We all have found kindred souls in this resistance, haven't we?
Absolutely. And the other thing I think is important, that it's also about, I think that more Americans need to have those uncomfortable conversations with people in their family that supported him or voted for him.
Yeah.
Because, so for instance, I have people in my family, and as soon as my activism started to take off, they were writing me messages and asking me more questions. And there's been a fair number of people in my life that voted blue in November in 2018 and are going to vote blue in 2020. Oh, I think that those times where, you know, remember, there's two things we don't discuss. We don't discuss religion, or we don't discuss politics.
Yeah.
I don't think in this time, you know, going back
we
to
can't afford that.
Silence is death, you know, from the 80s, to be silent right now is, you know, what Trump is doing to our country. America will not survive four more years of Trump.
No.
We will not survive eight years
of
Trump.
I'm not sure we can survive four more weeks, but that's just
right.
My
and so I just, but internal. There's this thing where we do get in our own echo chambers, you know, which is good, you know, to connect on Twitter. But I also think it's important for people just to have those honest conversations with people in their lives and start giving them some facts.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're being fed a steady diet of propaganda and lies. And my sister asked me a few weeks ago, she said, wait, do the Democrats really want to tax everyone at 70%?
No.
And I was like, no, of course not. That's a marginal tax rate. And if it passed, it'd be for their 10 millionth dollar at 70%.
Right.
But it's like, so people who make all their money is going to be taxed at 70%. I'm like, no. After they've earned 10 million in a year, then that 10 millionth and one dollar will get taxed at 70%. But she didn't know that.
Right.
Because
just like when we had the really great economy you all loved under Eisenhower.
Absolutely. But it's just those like simple things that, remember, we're dealing with the Fox News propaganda machine
that's
constantly like twisting and turning.
No, and my mom's...
And so we just want to shut everyone off or disconnect from people in our lives that still support him. But could you imagine if every single person, everyone knows a Trump supporter or two or three or five. And could you imagine just if we all started having those conversations?
Yeah.
It could start to shift things.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's hard. It's hard because they're very stubborn. But whenever I talk to them, and the other thing is like you have to be really stern with them. You can't back down.
This is how we do it, Ryan. One heart at a time, one relationship at a time, one family member, one friend. Because
one vote at
we've
a time.
Been dealing with it with my mom that, you know, it's our family fragmented over politics, and then now it's sort of come together over my mom's, because we're all pitching in and all helping.
Yep.
Even though I got like a screed from my brother about Obamacare and like whatever, but you know, we've also all banded together and taken care of mom. And then, you know, I was the one that had to tell her I was coming a week later because she was being released. And I told my brother, I said, you better love me like I'm a Fox News anchor, you motherfucker. And he laughed really hard. He laughed really hard.
That's amazing.
I am coming in and taking care of her for a week, and you better. And so, but you know, you're right. That's what, you know, when you're better at this than I am, you're better at sobriety, clearly, but you're better at Twitter. You're better at just sort of, you know, having that, keeping that empathy and that pure heart and that sort of, you know, how do we repair this country?
Yeah.
Like, how do we repair our relationships one at a time?
And remember that the truth is on our side. So when you realize that, it's not about being right or wrong, because we know, like, deep down, when you see some of the stuff he does, like Charlottesville,
right,
when he calls neo-Nazis very fine people, or and when he keeps taking the sides of dictators,
yeah,
Trump is clearly wrong. The Republican Party is clearly wrong.
Yeah. My father was a prosecutor at Nuremberg. I'm like, Mom.
So it's a matter of standing. It's a matter of just reaching that person and sharing in a very stern and very honest way.
Yeah.
That, look, this is what's happening. And the fundamental things, when they're attacking the free press and he's attacking our judiciary and he's attacking our FBI and he's attacking the Constitution. I mean, he's literally destabilizing our country.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. One time with my mother. I was like, he's going to jail, Mom. Yeah. And I was like, I'm sorry. But I felt like, what happens if he does? And then, oh, fake news, dear. Witch hunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all a hoax.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. But when it's hard because it's so personal to all of us, right? Like you were saying,
totally.
This is how you've dedicated your whole life to this, because when she says, oh, I think Dad would love him, I'm like, oh my God, my father would be rolling over in his grave, you know, not only Nuremberg prosecutor, but running mate of the guy that went to Nixon and said, you got to go.
Yeah. Right.
You're a crook and you got to go now. Like, I just...
And your dad was also a moderating influence on Goldwater. Yes. That's why Goldwater picked him.
Yes. Every speech started with what Barry meant to say. Was.
And also the other thing that's going to wake people up is the Federal Reserve just came out with their 2018 statistics, and U.S. household wealth had its biggest fall in the fourth quarter of 2018 since the financial crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So it's going to start hitting people's pocketbooks. And I think they're just going to realize, I mean, Trump is that person who, he came in, he doesn't solve any problems.
No,
he creates problems.
He makes
problems.
Them all worse.
He
creates
crisis. Ones.
Yes. I'm sorry, Travis. Yes.
You're going to regret not having a bottle down here.
Oh, get it.
Paul Manafort to get 47 months in prison.
What?
What?
Wait, that's isn't it? There also a...
There's still the D.C. trial.
More, yeah.
He's got potentially 10 more years, but 47 months, roughly almost 4 years.
I only have this much left.
The gout may kill him first.
Hmm?
he showed up in a wheelchair. Yeah, and I said on Twitter, bullshit. Is this the episode where Mike Brady throws the briefcase down and making him stand up?
Don't buy that bullshit. This is the Vinny the Chin episode. I'm in the bathroom. I'm whatever. Ryan, because people I'm sure want to know, do you feel like there will be justice at the end of the day? I mean, what are your thoughts on Mueller? What are your thoughts in general, SDNY?
So if I'm being very honest, I go back and forth all the time if there's going to be justice. I mean, I think if one thing that Trump should wake up a lot of people, like even if a rich, powerful, white, straight man becomes president and starts breaking a bunch of laws, it's really hard to hold him accountable. Right, when he's got Fox News and an entire Republican Party protecting
him. That's
the
difference with Nixon.
Right?
Right-wing radio, Fox News.
So that, you know, but I do think, you know, things are starting to come, right? We still got the Southern District of New York. We still have Robert Mueller. The other thing that's interesting is, remember 3 weeks ago when the Mueller report was finished and he was going to send it over to the DOJ?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happened to that?
Yeah.
That was a false report.
It seems like everything is, you can't trust any of it.
Right. And that's what it's there. Thank you for saying that. We always, in this climate, when you have a president who's trying to cover up something, and this is what drives me nuts about the media, is when they take what Sarah Sanders and they print, the New York Times will print something she said, or they'll print Trump's denial of something. And it's like, no. This entire White House and this entire Republican Party is engaged in a cover up. Mm-hmm. And when you're engaged in a cover up, you're lying.
Yeah.
So the rule number one is to not take anything they say at face value and to start doing your own research and to kind of, and that's what I'll do. Like I'll read a little here and I'll go a little there. And then you formulate your own thoughts based on doing the actual research and reading all these different things. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that really struck me. It was like, remember we kind of were deflated, like, oh, Mueller's wrapping up. And all of a sudden now it's like, what's,
yeah.
you know, I do think that, I think that he will, if he was going to indict Trump Jr. or Jared Kushner, they would be indicted at the very end. Right, yeah. Because it's
well, that's what I'm
Trump
hearing.
Going,
that, oh, like we're nervous well, no, about Trump the will, president's kids because that'll be the last thing yeah. he does.
And
if he does,
and it's a smart yeah. strategic move. I mean, yeah. could you imagine if Mueller had indicted Trump Jr. like off the bat? Yeah. It would have sent Trump to you know yeah. A crazier land than he's already in, which
yeah.
is hard to imagine. But you know, and then the other thing is if he was going to indict for conspiracy as well, the conspiracy that we all watched, right? Russia, if you're listening, go hack Hillary's yeah. emails, right?
Yeah.
They had over 100 contacts with Russian operatives. That's the other thing I always tell people. While Russia was attacking our election, the same time they were attacking our election, the Trump campaign was having 100 contacts with them.
Yeah.
It happened you know, at the same time, simultaneously.
Totally coincidental.
What were they talking about? The Yankees? No. yeah. It's like I just
Russian
where
adoptions?
Did, where,
no.
Right, where did people's common sense go?
Right.
That's the
exactly.
other thing with all this.
Yeah, that's
like,
what
where
I keep
did,
saying. We're in the biggest, like, dumbest plotted movie ever. We're like, what
and
the
it's just,
fuck? Are you serious?
And it's
you
also
don't get
brazen in front of your face.
yeah.
You know, where it's like, and then, you know, Trump Jr., he gets the email. That this is from the Russian government on behalf of the Russian government
regarding dirt on Hillary
to help your father's yeah. presidential campaign, and then he writes back, "I love it,"
yeah.
and then he takes
especially
the meeting
after Labor Day,
right? And then they meet, and then he tries to cover up the meeting and say, "Oh no, it was about adoptions. It was about sanctions. It was about yeah. the Magnitsky yeah.
so
Act."
So much,
right?
He mispronounced sanctions.
One of your coping tools is to follow Proud Resistor on Twitter. It's one of mine, man. I'm telling you. But Travis, how many times have I said this to you? Sometimes I tell him, print all of Twitter. But because that's where we go for, like, oh, I'm not fucking crazy. I'm
not
taking
alone.
Crazy pills. Yeah. I'm not alone. Like, did I just see this news event that you're right, the media is handling all wrong and go, oh my God.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, never Trumpers or it's former prosecutors or it's just Twitter resistors like you that people go, oh, we're just, you know, putting the facts out there going, you are not alone. You are not crazy.
Totally. I mean, they still cover him like he's just another Republican president.
I can't take
like,
any of normal punditry.
Like, no.
That's why I go to you on Twitter because I'm like, what? I can't.
I look at them and I'm like, no, this is not like,
right.
this is not normal.
No.
Like, we are experiencing we've left normal in 2015.
Yeah. It's whatever analogy you want, the frog boiling, yes. whatever. The essential Twitter follow is a Proud Resistor. Ryan Knight, what a pleasure. I mean, we thought, like, so many people love you and want to know more about you as a person because you're just a Twitter handle to them, and you are such an amazing human. And so thank you so much for doing
this.
Thank
you for having me.
I have drunk a lot less champagne in this happy hour. It's not great, but it's better.
Well,
Chris,
congratulations.
Thank you.
And let's get out there and win in 2020.
Yes.
Thank you.
Vote blue.
All right. Thank you. Ryan Knight, Proud Resistor. Happy, happy hour.